Hello, this is our final live stream. I'm coming to you live, final live stream for the year, I should say. I'm coming to you live from the global headquarters of the world's best capitalized bank, headquartered in the world's best capitalized country. I say it's the final live stream, it's the final planned live stream. If something special happens, we always love to come back and update all of you. As usual, we have a cavalcade of stars with us as we recap some of the highlights from the year. But of course, what's most important is what are we watching over the holidays and what are we thinking about for next year, particularly around the Trump administration and what that might mean for markets. So let's get right into it. And we're going to start with Burkhard Barnhold. And Burkhard, why don't you tell us a little bit about what was remarkable about this year from your perspective?
With pleasure, and thank you, Mark, for having me in this. Look, I think from an economic perspective, three things stood out in 2024. The first one was this was the year when inflation truly receded. The second thing that stood out, economically speaking, was this was a year where people, especially in the United States, but also in Europe and around the industrialized world, had lots of money in their pockets and they used it for shopping. And they had money in their pockets because jobs were plentiful as unemployment rates were lowering and lowering throughout the year. And jobs were even better paid. Meanwhile, and despite all of this, corporate profits reached new all-time highs, both profits in absolute terms as well as profit margins. And those two things were reconciled by an outstanding increase in productivity that really made all this possible together. And the third thing from an economic perspective that stood out was the rise of a new world order. The rise of a new world order, which stands in our view on three pillars: a new security order, call it the beginning of a new global arms race, as every country around the world seems intent on spending 2 to 4% of GDP on weapons and safety and security and what have you. Secondly, the energy transition is finally started in earnest, caused by the global energy crisis in the year before that. And third, reshoring factories to shorten supply chains has also really started in earnest. And those three things caused what we call the Roaring Twenties, a unique decade of superior profit growth and purchasing power. And from a market perspective, that in turn had three simple implications, that's the way I see it. The first one was the Roaring Twenties caused a roaring bull market in everything from stocks to bonds to real estate around the world. The second, this bull market turned 2 years old this year. In fact, on October 11th this year, it celebrated its second anniversary. That is noteworthy, not because it makes it old, but to the contrary, because it makes it a young bull market. A brief anatomy in the history of bull and bear markets suggests that over the last 100 years or so, bull markets on average lasted 6.6 years, generated average annualized returns of 19% per annum, while bear markets on average lasted 1.4 years and lost 35 years. The shortest bull market in history was briefly shortened after 2.5 years in 1974, and the more comparable one to this actually lasted 13 years and was the 1990s bull market. And so that brings me to my third takeaway from the year 2024, which is really a truism. It was a year that once again proved time in the market beats timing the market. Put differently, the stock market is really just a beautiful redistribution mechanism that redistributes wealth from the impatient to the patient investor.
All right, testify at the Church of Stock Market Participation. Thank you for that. One last question, Burkhart. Tariffs, the United States, talk about impatient. I think I'm feeling a little impatient about what might happen. Can you talk a little bit about what the current thinking is on how tariffs might impact investors?
Look, I think the bottom line is a lot of ink has been spilled on the subject. It's probably not wise to lose sleep over it, quite simply because, for one, there are simply too many variables, too many known unknowns up in the air. Will they really happen, or are they a negotiating plot? How high will they, and how will they affect everyone? Will they affect everyone in the same way? And the other questions, of course, are they inflationary, or are they a wash like in 2016 when productivity gains compensated for them? Or could they even be deflationary if they reduce global trade? It's too early to tell, so I'll resort once again to a time-tested truism, which says that prepare, don't predict, is probably the wise way to deal with them right here and now.
All right. I mean, I will say that we're going to be, you know, watching, and I think that, you know, there's some scenarios, massive tariffs, where we're going to have to take a close look and update you, you know, whether that's Christmas Eve or Boxing Day or New Year's, if we get more news. But it's likely to come after the holidays if we were to get such moving news. Of course, we could also get news that actually the tariffs aren't going to be an issue at all, and more like the deregulation agenda and other factors are more significant. So we're going to stay on it over the holidays. So maybe you can enjoy yourself a little more. Let's shift to Leslie. And Leslie, rates. I mean, we're in this global easing cycle. Those of us over here in Europe are basking in the warm glow of some recent cuts. So can you tell us what's going on with the major central banks and what you're thinking about for next year?
Yeah, I mean, Mark, as you mentioned, you know, we're expecting a global cutting cycle, probably about 100 basis points for the ECB in 2025. But the spotlight, I think, is obviously on the Fed, and particularly tomorrow. And when we enter into tomorrow's meeting, it's, you know, there's 97% chance that they cut 25 basis points. But what has shifted, and we've had a year of a lot of shifting narratives, but where it stands right now as we enter tomorrow, they're only looking at about 43 basis points of cuts in 2025, which is much lower than our 100 basis point expectation. And I think a lot of that, what is due to this, is because not just the growth that we've seen, and we're looking at, you know, GDP now at about 3.3%. But part of this also is this concern over this reacceleration of inflation and the stubbornness of inflation. If we go to the next slide, you know, one of the things that we look at, you know, when the Fed started cutting in September, is that, you know, we looked at the how much the market had moved in from the 10-year rate. And yeah, that'll be the next slide if you can, please. What this showed is that this red line shows sort of how the markets moved since the Fed started cutting in September, which we all know was fairly deep out of the gate at 50 basis points. And the right-hand side is showing what the 10-year Treasury has done. And a lot of this is driven by what the left-hand side has done in that red line, is the fact that inflation expectations still remain, you know, pretty high. Now, it's our expectation heading into 2025, and we saw a little bit of this in the recent CPI, that things such as rent and owner's equivalent rent start to trend lower as we go into the year and throughout 2025. And this has sort of been the stubbornness of CPI holding steady the past 3 months. And, you know, CPI, the majority of the component is service inflation, not good inflation. So we're expecting this to start to trend lower, and therefore yields will start to trend lower. But one of the risks that we're seeing, particularly when it comes to the 10-year Treasury, is what will be the backstop, or what is sort of like the tailwind here in terms of why the Fed will more than likely, you know, pause, go 4 quarters in 2025 versus each meeting. And as we look at the next slide, a lot of this will be why. Is it growth or is it inflation? And this will really dictate in terms of how the Treasury market moves, not only in terms of level, but in terms of shape. And one of those sort of variables is how the equity market and the Treasury market on a total return basis is correlated. And when you have this negative correlation like we're seeing right now, then the term premium or the amount of compensation investors expect can stay relatively stable. However, if we have this repeat where inflation reaccelerates and that correlation starts to decouple, that's when the term premium moves higher, particularly in that back end. Now, our expectation is that interest rates will fall in 2025 as inflation comes down, but as growth stays above trend. But it's not in a fashion where we think it's a hard landing scenario. We're looking at about 4% in 10-year treasury yield, which is really mostly due to this soft landing. But you're going to see a lot of volatility, and you're definitely not going to have a straight line. And a lot of this will be the components as to what's happening with the economy versus the Fed's path. Is it on the growth side or is it on the inflation side?
All right, well, that's on, you know, the inflation and the policy side. How should investors begin to think about what lies ahead?
Yeah, if we look at the next slide, I mean, listen, we've had a year, as the equity market has, where, you know, spreads have compressed in fixed income quite a bit. So the opportunity set within fixed income is not going to come from spread compression, or it's not even going to come from price appreciation due to dramatically declining interest rates. It's really going to be from that carry component. And that's going to be the key when we think about fixed income going forward, or in terms of investing going forward. That compounding income and carry that you could earn is really going to be the tailwind to total return. Now, although we are expecting above trend growth, we are looking at some of these higher quality sectors, particularly given the fact how much we've seen volatility drop, and that's on the left-hand side. Now, volatility has dropped quite a bit since over the past 2 months, and while we're looking for it over the course of the year to stay fairly sanguine because of the narratives probably won't shift as much as it has, you know, the fact that we're going into a time with a new election, we don't know the policy implementation, you know, or the duration or the sequence, that you're probably going to have volatility come up a bit again. So what we're looking for is high quality, but we're going to stick with those income driving components that are really going to be the tailwind to your total return.
Well, I think this concludes our time. Our honor and privilege to be part of your financial life and your wealth management experience. And we certainly look forward to coming back next year and continuing the conversation. So thank you all. Bye-bye.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.